You want to take out your Bibles and open up to 1 Corinthians chapter 1, page 1141 in the Pew Bibles. As we take some time this morning to look in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, I want to start in verse 17. He says, "For Christ did not send me to baptize, but to preach the gospel, not in cleverness of speech, so that the cross of Christ would not be made void." Paul is very upfront. I didn't come to just baptize people. So often that's what people look at. They think in terms of whenever missionaries get sent out, people always want to know how many people are being baptized. It's really the wrong question. Is the gospel really being put in front of the people? God's people, those who are outsiders, that is the ultimate importance. And if you notice it, Paul says, if I'm just here to baptize people, and there's no revelation in terms of seeing the gospel, in terms of seeing here, he says, to preach the gospel, he says, and not in cleverness of speech. I don't know if you ever look at the titles before the time comes for the lessons. If you notice, there would be 1,000 more ways for them to be clever. It would be 1,000 ways more useless. Paul says, I came to preach the gospel. He says, the responses will come when hearts are really impacted. And it's not about being clever and cute. It's about the real question of, where's the wisdom of the cross? Where's the gospel in this? If you also notice, if you turn to cleverness, what does it do with the gospel? You can even make it void. You can all of a sudden take the most powerful events, the most powerful wisdom to ever be introduced to man, and to make it completely void. Now, Paul comes to this point, and he's going to really introduce to the saints at Corinth some application. And to realize it's so easy to look at these next few verses and make a comparison and go, all right, here's the world and here's the church. But that's not at all what he's really talking about. Because I want you to see, look at verse 18. He says, "For the word of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God." He says, here's the word of the cross. And he says it has everything to do with your spiritual life and death. To those who are being saved, he says, it is the power of God. To those who are perishing, it is foolishness. And the root word for this Greek word that's called foolishness is where we get our English word moron. Now, I want you to think about the type of people you consider to be morons. Do you ever think to yourself, that's who I want to imitate? Help me to be as stupid and moronic as those people. You probably never said that, have you? Paul's making a point to the church. Do you see the cross and the gospel as the wisdom and the power of God? Or do you just see it as a good story? You just see it as, well, that saved my soul. He says, because if we don't see the gospel in the cross as the biggest, most magnificent events and wisdom of God, we're dying. Even among those who were at Corinth, there were people there who were dying. There were people there who said, I will not be defrauded. I will not be wronged. I'm going to get what's mine. How does that imitate Jesus? How does that imitate the gospel? He says, if you don't see the cross as the wisdom of God and the power of God, you will be utterly empty and think you are just fine. Notice how he continues the thought here. Look at verse 19. He says, "For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and the cleverness of the clever I will set aside." He says, this is God's response to cleverness. This is his response to, if you're not going to see the gospel as the power of God and the wisdom of God, he says, you're perishing. This is really an overlay for the rest of the book of 1 Corinthians, along with other things that are coming. There were those in Corinth who were utterly despicable in their immorality, to the point that even the outsiders would blush at such things. That's 1 Corinthians 5. There were some people who cared more about their freedoms than they did about being loving toward one another. There's 1 Corinthians chapter 8. There were some who looked down in terms of, you want me to submit and be submissive? No way. What do you see as a theme through all of those situations? People who are dying spiritually, or maybe even already dead. Why? How does it get that far down and that far away? We don't see the gospel as the wisdom of God and the power of God. We just see it as, it's just as good as anything else. Notice how this continues in the thought here in verse 19. He says, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and the cleverness of the clever I will set aside. He says, I'm going to show you how worthless it really is. I'm going to expose it. Now, if you notice, this is a quotation out of Isaiah chapter 29. So look back at Isaiah and let's take a closer look. Page 710 in the Pew Bible. Page 710. Look at verse 13. Isaiah 29, 13. You'll see the quotation comes out of verse 14, but look at verse 13. Then the Lord said, because this people draw near with their words and honor me with their lip service, but they remove their hearts far from me, and their reverence for me consists of tradition learned by rote. He says, when people approach God this way, they say the right words, but it's just lip service. The heart is not in it. The reverence that they show for God is just simply learned by rote. He says, if that describes our relationship with God, we know the right words to say, but the actions don't follow. I know I'm supposed to love my enemy like Christ loved us. I know that that's what I should do. But there's no heart response. We come together and we sing songs sometimes that we can sing in autopilot. Sometimes we can even quote the verses in our own heads. But to actually live them. I want you to notice, he lays it out here. He says, they've removed their hearts far from me. He says, their reverence is just rote. It's just things that they do by tradition. Traditions of men. Verse 14. Therefore, behold, I will once again deal marvelously with this people, wondrously marvelous. And the wisdom of their wise men will perish, and the discernment of their discerning men will be canceled. He says, I'm going to cancel out your wisdom. I'm going to put it right in front of you and I'm going to destroy it. The things that you put high praise on, I'm going to rip down and I'm going to set them aside. Because they don't have anything to do with the power of God and the wisdom of God in the gospel. Notice how he continues. Here's verse 15. Woe to those who deeply hide their plans from the Lord, and whose deeds are done in a dark place, and they say, who sees us? Who knows us? We become a people who think, you know what? I know what God expects of me. I know what His Word says. I worship Him. But I don't let His Word come in to take over my life. I don't let the gospel control my life. To be loving toward even my own enemies. I start to think, I can do it my own way. Nobody's going to see. Nobody knows what's in my heart. I'm saying the right thing. Surely they'll accept me. They deeply hide their plans. Hide their plans. These are the things they're planning on doing. He says, you don't think God knows. That's a moron. Look at verse 16. You turn things around. Shall the potter be considered as equal with the clay? That what it is made would say to its maker, he did not make me. Or what is formed says to him who formed it, he has no understanding. If we ever go through difficulties and look at God and go, he doesn't understand what I'm going through. That is foolishness. When you see the death of Jesus, we need to understand we have never experienced anything like that. He's the one who knows the power and the wisdom of God. And yet we might think he doesn't understand, he doesn't know. How foolish we are to think that way. And the only way we come there is whenever we don't see the gospel as the wisdom of God and the power of God. Whenever all of a sudden our reverence toward God is just tradition, it's just things that we do by rote, whenever the heart is not in it. And you realize, what are we doing if that's us? We are rotting on the vine. And it's not because of the vine. It's because of us. Now, come back over to 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Whenever we start to think as the clay that we're on the same level as the potter, he says, we've missed it completely. When we think, you know what, I have just as much wisdom as God does. I hope you hear the arrogance in that. And I hope we see it clear enough to see it in our own selves, in our own minds. Notice verse 20, 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 20. Where is the wise man? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? He says, come. He says, you think you're so wise, you think you're so smart, you think you're a great debater? Come stand before God. Think about Jesus. Jesus ever talked to scribes? Ever talk to men who are supposed to be wise? Ever talk to the great debaters? What did they all leave with? Shame. They came up together before Jesus to really try to confound him and trip him and test him up, and yet they walked away realizing, man, he made us look foolish. There's a reason why. Here's Jesus working off of the wisdom of God, completely destroying what even the religious people were going after. Now, when you stop and take that in, he says, the wise man, the debater, oh, we think we're so wise, but we won't come into the shadow of the cross to live the heart of the gospel. Every day, every situation. It covers everything. You could almost put up a moniker. Everything I need to know, I can learn at the cross. Because that's what everything is pressing forward toward. And that's what the saints in Corinth needed to understand. They were having all these situations within the congregation. And Paul's saying, is anybody going to live by the gospel? Is anybody going to respond with a heart that draws near to God out of living the cross? Because that's what's putting right in front of them. Do you want to be those who are perishing, or do you want to be those who are saved? It has everything to do with your life that you live every day. Are we living the gospel? So often we think of the gospel as being limited to the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. It covers more than that. But that is definitely the heart of it. When you see it here in place, just think about Jesus when he's being lifted up. He comes, even the night before, praying to God, "Not my will, but your will be done." You mean a humble gospel? A humble Jesus? One that says, it doesn't matter the cost, I will submit to you. Is that the way we respond to God? Yet whenever you see those who are going to crucify Jesus, what is working in their wisdom, in their heart? Is it not selfishness? Is it not jealousy, envy, bitterness, hatred? So often you hear the world speak in terms of somebody said something bad to you, you just use that and you give it to them. Oh, you be motivated by hate. You really think that's a good idea? That's not the gospel. What motivates Jesus? Total heart of submission before God. What is he able to endure? The most excruciating pains of death, and yet he still honors his Father. Which mindset won victorious? The Jews thought they won. And then God set their wisdom aside when Jesus was raised from the dead. A resurrection that some of the folks in Corinth don't even believe in. They needed to come to the gospel. They needed to come to see the wisdom and the power of God in the exact same way that we do. This is not a story of, oh, that world does it this way, and those of us who are in Christ do it this way. No. This is a story of God's own people. Are we going to choose the gospel or our own wisdom that we've learned from the world? Are we going to set the worldly wisdom and say it's just as good as the gospel? When you see the little quotes and little quips and sayings that get made, you go, oh yeah, that's great. Have you read about this? We're perishing. And the sad part is we can't even tell it. At times we become so blind to it. See that it stands in opposition to the gospel. If you notice verse 21, he says, "For since in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not come to know God, God was well pleased through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe." He says, it's the foolishness of the message. There's a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek here. That's the way the world talks about it. That's the way even some of the saints talk about it. God's own people who've been set apart as holy, going right back into death. How far do I have to go to love my enemy? Would you give your life to love your enemy? Because that's what Jesus did. And yet he won victoriously. Are we willing to walk in the gospel, in the wisdom and power of God? Because whenever you walk in his power, only God has never been defeated. And you're standing in his power. Now, I want you to consider here in verse 21, he says, in the wisdom of God, the world, through its wisdom, did not come to know God. Here's worldly wisdom. Worldly wisdom gives you statements like, Well, if you don't enjoy doing it, then don't do it. Is that the mindset of Jesus? Does he go, oh, please let this cup pass from me. And if I can't enjoy it, just don't make me endure it. Sounds foolish, doesn't it? Yet so often we're called to do things that may be difficult and may be hard. And if you're going to draw off of the power of God and the wisdom of God, you gain the strength to be able to walk the path. And he will help. You see the full submissiveness of Jesus. You see self-control in Jesus. When he's being mocked by those who pass by the religious leaders, by the scribes, by the Pharisees, he has self-control and does not respond. When people say things that are not true about you, what is your response? We want to set them straight. That's not the gospel. That's not living the gospel. That is something that is atrocious to men. Let's just take it this way. Maybe you're on a digital website and somebody posts something about you. Degrading. What do you want to do? You want to respond, don't you? You want to clear your name, don't you? Where do you see that in Jesus? He says, I'll let the Lord stand for me. I'll walk with him. People have all kinds of foolishness they work off of. Sometimes people look at their children, they turn 2 years old, and they go, oh, this is going to be the terrible twos. You know why it's so terrible? The child hasn't been told no yet in their life. And all of a sudden you tell them no? What do you expect? Was Jesus ever told no? He was. How did he take it? Full submission. How do we take it when we're told no? Self-centered? Tantrum? Jealousy? Hatred? We ready to humble ourselves under his almighty hand? That's what we need. The world's not going to come to that on their own conclusion. They're going to have to come to the cross, just like we do. And to have a mindset off of the wisdom of God that's right there. Now, if you notice how he continues here, God says, I'm well pleased with the preaching of my gospel. He says, I'm well pleased in that. I'm not embarrassed by it. I'm not ashamed of the gospel. He says, because that's the wisdom of God and the power of God. Notice how it continues on a little bit further. Verse 22. He says, for indeed, Jews ask for signs and Greeks search for wisdom. He says, Jews ask for signs. They ask Jesus for signs over and over again. You can read about it in Matthew 12. You can read about it in Matthew 16. And what's Jesus' response when the Jews say, show us a sign and we'll believe? Jesus says, an evil and adulterous generation looks for signs. That tells you where he stands. If we're so foolish of a people to say, God, if you're really there, will you? Evil and adulterous generation. Jesus says, the only sign that I'm going to give you is the sign of Jonah. And his resurrection stands to this day. They don't even know which tomb he was in because his body's not there. Do we see the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus as wisdom? The wisdom of submission wholeheartedly to God, no matter what is being asked of us by the will of God. even to die with Jesus. That's where we truly live. That's where we come to the power of God. So often we think, I don't know the power of God, because we're not willing to submit ourselves to walk with Him in the gospel. I can't say I don't want to tolerate my enemy and then think, oh, God's going to strengthen me through that. You mean I'm going to have to be forgiving? Man is so self-centered and so selfish. And then yet you look at Jesus as He is walking the path to the cross. In the garden, He says, not my will, but Your will be done. You see beyond that, even getting to a further spot, as He's walking out, He's so weak that He can't even carry His own cross. And there are women behind Him who are weeping and mourning over the fact that He is going out to be crucified. Jesus turns around and says to them, daughters of Jerusalem, don't weep and mourn for Me. He's not self-centered. In the midst of suffering, are we so selfless that we can look out to the needs of other people? Here's Jesus being crucified. And in being crucified, there's a thief that's right there beside Him who turns from mocking Him at the beginning to one of belief and faith. Jesus responds. He's still looking out at the needs of others. And in the midst of all these things together, while He's being crucified and it's so difficult even to speak, to take in a breath, He utters these words, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Is that what's in our heart when people hurt us and harm us? God, will You forgive them for their ignorance? Will You help me to die, to love them? They're my enemy. Open the door for them to be Your friend. That's the wisdom and the power of the cross. That's why we have forgiveness. Is that where our life is? That we look at the life situations and we go, how can I apply the cross here? Because that's where God gives you power to overcome. Is right there in dying with Him to ourself. Being buried with Him and being raised up victorious through Christ. He continues on here. He says, the Jews ask for signs. Sign of Jonah is the only one I'm giving. He says, in Greek, search for wisdom. They want something that's new. Well, this wisdom is old and it's tried and it's true. He continues, verse 23. But we preach Christ crucified, the Jews a stumbling block and a Gentile's foolishness. He says, we preach Christ crucified. That's where I'm going to die. Paul says, I don't care what they do to me. I'm going to preach Christ crucified. That's exactly what Corinth needed, and that's exactly what we need. And may we never forget it. May we never think that the wisdom of the world is just as good. Because we've become a moron, if that's the way we think. He continues on here. He says, the Jews a stumbling block. They wanted to crucify Jesus, yet here's Jesus as the chief cornerstone. He says, the Gentiles, it's foolishness. You mean sacrifice your own rights when you don't have to? Why would you do that? 1 Corinthians 8 is going to be all about it. Verse 24, but to those who are the called, God's called out people, the saints, those who are in Jesus, the church, to those who are called both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. Here's where you find power. And here's where you learn wisdom. And if you get away from them, you'll be weak, dead, and foolish. Where does the wisdom of the cross dwell in you? Is it just lip service? Or is it abide in your heart to change everything about your life and how you live it for God? He finishes up with this thought, verse 25. Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. He makes a statement. Man thinks they're so strong. Weak. Think about how many wonderful sayings of the world have come and gone. The wisdom that people thought they had that was so smart. And God showed us foolishness. And then the world moves on to some other kind of foolishness. Don't be the fool. Be the wise. And enjoy standing in the power and wisdom of God.